Okay, so I'm standing here with you, Scott Belware. Welcome.
Thanks.
Good to be here.
How long have you been here for?
This week. I've been here for a few days.
And you did your talk today on TDD, right?
Test-driven development for web user interface, for web apps.
And what else do you do?
Well, that's a tough question, I guess. I work a lot in community, organizing as an activist, as a coach, mentor, independent product development work, both in .NET and Rails. Lots of things.
An activist? What is that?
it's the polite term I use to describe the things that I do that sometimes upsets Microsoft.
Oh, really? One of the first things I want to talk to you about is this about the alt.net community, because you've been a really kind of like a front figure in that discussion. Try to like talk about what your view today is about the alt.net community, if there is any alt.net community left.
I think there's a community left. My views are going to be my views. I think the alt.net community had a lot of good successes in making a lot of aspects of software development that were really sort of being overshadowed in the .NET community. Let's say principles of software development and patterns of software development that were being overshadowed by pure tooling, tool-based approach. So the alt.net community succeeded, I think, in generating a lot of a lot more awareness of the rest of software development, not just tools, but also
the principles,
also principles, right?
Yeah. Okay. Why is that important?
Why is it important? Because if you don't understand the principles, you can't get very far with the tools, and then you also can't understand really. Whether the tools you are using are the right tools. Sometimes we try, if we don't understand the principles, we use tools because we have no choice.
Give an example, maybe?
Not without getting political, I suppose.
That's okay.
Well, let's just take, actually, there's a really good, not even a political example, there's a really great example of this, I think, in ASP.NET. Mm-hmm. So we started out with drag and drop. Web forms, and a very interesting Visual Basic 6 WinForms style of software development for the web. This goes back to 2001 when we started seeing the betas, and then over time, people started to understand how much more difficult it was to work with. So now we see a shift more towards things that were very common in the Rails community, or I think the Rails community really drove this, the drive for model view controller, and a more closer to nature, a more natural approach to web development. So ASP.NET seems more natural to the web, or model view controller is more natural to the web.
Don't you think that it's just, because I agree with you that the web forms ideology, or whatever you call it, is kind of like, it's a pretty steep learning curve if you have a past in PHP or any scripting language. I mean, it's kind of like a different different approach to things. Don't you just think that Microsoft learned from that instead of saying that, well, it was the Ruby on Rails community that kind of invented?
No, they didn't invent it. I think Ruby on Rails made it very. The Ruby on Rails community made it very. Made it more popular.
Okay.
It was already in the community.
One of the things that I'm looking at daily, actually, is like, I can't understand why people still use ASP Classic, like Active Server Pages, instead of using ASP.NET. There must be some,
because they're making money?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's a good reason. I mean, there's a lot of products that make money, and a lot of money. And, if it works, it works. Yeah. If you're making money, it works. There's a company in Austin, a Microsoft partner called Dovetail, and they've got a classic ASP app, and there's not really a compelling reason to change that much code if it works. The only compelling reason to change it is fear.
Yeah.
And fear is a reasonable motivator, but shouldn't be the only motivator. So, if you're starting a new app, maybe it's not the smartest thing to use classic ASP. If you're starting a new app, it might not be a good idea to use ASP WebForms. It might not even be a good idea to use ASP MVC. You know, I would argue that there are we should be looking at web technologies that are the right technology. A lot of times we call ourselves Microsoft developers or Java developers or Oracle developers. Why don't you just be a web developer? And then go find the right tool. Why isn't PHP the tool of choice? Or Django or Ruby on Rails? Considered equally on par with ASP.NET MVC or ASP.NET WebForms. And obviously there are skills considerations. So I guess you go with what you know, and the problem is if you never change what you know or you never improve what you know, and you really don't get to make principle choices. So you go back to principles. If you don't understand the principles, you're just going to be stuck. You're going to use a bunch of tools and you're not even going to know why.
Yeah, but I guess that, I mean, I guess also the technology that you use, for example, that Ruby on Rails has Active Record. It's like it's locked into Active Record, where ASP.NET MVC has a more flexible model.
Well, it's flexible because it hasn't got a model.
Yeah, exactly.
So it has infinite potential because it doesn't have any answer. I'll give you that much. That's great. That's but there's value in that too. I mean, we're kind of like being making a joke about it. But there's people have successfully tied it to Link to SQL. They've successfully tied it to nHibernate. People are having success with it. Ruby on Rails is bound to Active Record, but Ruby on Rails 3 will be unbound from Active Record. Will also support Datamapper framework and also support another framework called SQL. So, you know, everybody is sort of converging on a more openness, I think, in the data access and multiple frameworks in the communities of many frameworks. But for the most part, I think that many websites can be well served by Active Record as a pattern, and I think this was true. We saw this with Monorail, the Monorail framework for .NET that was the Castle project. It bound you to Active Record out of the box, but you didn't have to use it. But it was quite successful, and can be quite successful for a lot of applications.
That's true enough. So you had your talk today on TDD, test driven development.
Mm-hmm.
Can you try to like explain what that is really all about?
Sure. Test driven development is about verifying that the design that you have is not going to present too many productivity problems in the future. And we do that by putting our objects under scrutiny as early as possible. Which means you really know whether a class or an API or a library is nice to work with or easy to work with when you instantiate a few objects and work with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if it's difficult to instantiate an object, set it up, set all the configuration, all this stuff up, you've basically got a design problem.
Uh-huh.
Probably a coupling problem, a cohesion problem, or a complexity problem. So in test-driven development, we try to use this exercise that Mark Miller from Developer Express calls consume-first programming, where you write a line of code that consumes the object you're writing, and you write that first to sort of express how you'd like to consume this object. And it's usually a very, very simple way, because nobody comes up with the idea that I want to instantiate a...
So it's like pseudocode you write first.
It's almost pseudocode, but it's real code.
Oh, okay.
So it's real C# code, but the objects that you're instantiating don't exist. So no one really says, I want to instantiate an ASP.NET identity provider or a security provider and make it complicated. They're going to say, new identity provider equals new identity provider. And they don't really say, well, first I want to create a lot of SQL databases, and then I want to say create a lot of XML configuration. You tend to drive simplicity with consume-first development.
Okay.
And that simplicity ends up having a lot of positive side effects in just pure object-oriented design. In the end, when you write all of your code, or a lot of your code this way, you end up with much more simple design that has a lot higher ability to be learned, which inevitably turns into productivity.
Okay.
So we get productivity from somewhere else.
Yeah.
We don't really get it from the tools.
Yeah.
We get it from simplicity.
Yeah.
And it turns out you can get a lot higher productivity from simplicity, from avoiding complexity, than writing tools that hide complexity, because the complexity never goes away.
Well, that's true enough. I think that, you know, there's a lot of terms these years, you know, TDD, BDD, DDD, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, a lot of people really focused on principles and the time patterns and guidelines and you should do the right thing. But I mean, how do you find the way? I mean,
you find the way through practice.
Okay.
So you, really, it's, there's really no, awesome. Yeah, you, I mean, there's a certain level of knowledge that you can gain just by almost like reaching out and taking it like material.
Yeah, like reading it or...
Yeah, like, yeah. And it's, there's some, like tools can be learned.
Yeah.
Tools are materialistic.
Yeah.
They're almost tangible.
Yeah.
Principles are intangible. So some knowledge you can get just by getting a tool. Or some ability you can get just by getting a tool. But that's limited. Some things you're going to have to practice or do. And I don't say you have to go home and, you know, rehearse, but that's a good idea. Do exercises and do katas. But you get the experience through experience. There's no way around it. Well, the problem is when we try to replace experience and knowledge with tools. Then it never works.
No, that's a really good point. That's a really good point, Scott. Well, we have to finish up here, but I want to say thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's good to meet you.